Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 25th, 2006. Our session today is entitled A Pilgrimage with Jacob. It is possible to go home again. Our presenter is Richard Prigge. Session number PRR 2006-05. Let's listen in.
Everyone, God be with you.
And also with you.
Let us pray. This is the day which the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Our gracious God, indeed, we do rejoice and are glad in the gift of this new day. And especially we rejoice in the chance to be here at Holden this day. And this time, however short or long it's been for each of us, we rejoice in what you have been doing in our lives by just being here in this community. And we pray that this day, and even in this hour ahead, that you would continue to work on us. You might even drop in on us and wrestle with us and enable us to take from that wrestling some sort of blessing. It helps us make sense of our lives and draws us closer to you. So we pray that, gracious God, that you'd give us a blessing even in this hour ahead as we wrestle with Jacob and with you. All this we ask in the strong name of Jesus Christ, our Lord.
Amen.
And so we ended yesterday kind of in the middle of that wrestling match with God. And so we need to go back there to the middle of that wrestling with God. And so in order to do that, I think we had better read that story again. It's not a very long one. So if you turn to chapter 32 in Genesis, Genesis 32, verse 22. Genesis chapter 32, verse 22. We're going to jump right back into that story again. So if I could have a volunteer who would be willing to read that story while the rest of us follow along. Someone please just launch. Okay, Ruth, just launch in there.
32 to the end.
32 verses 22 to 32. Uh-huh, to the end.
The same night he got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then the man said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the thigh muscle that is on the hip socket, because he struck Jacob on the hip socket at the thigh muscle.
Okay, thanks. All right, so we noticed yesterday kind of an ambiguity in the identity of the assailant who drops in and wrestles with Jacob. And I think we argued that this was a deliberate ambiguity. I mean, in one sense, it is a man. It's clearly identified here that a man wrestled with him until daybreak. But also it seems that in the wrestling with a man, Jacob has also quite clearly wrestled with God. Okay? You have striven with God and with man and have prevailed. Truly, I have seen God face to face, Jacob says. In this wrestling with a man, Jacob has also seen God face to face. We also talked about how, in a sense, Jacob may have been wrestling with himself, with his past, his life story, in a sense. There was a gentleman that I met here yesterday who was here who, by the name of Kevin. Is he here? I'm looking around for Kevin. No,
he'll be here in about 5 minutes.
He'll be here in 5 minutes. Well, all right. But Kevin came up to me yesterday after the session and said, is it possible that Jacob was wrestling with his shadow? Now, there's someone who knows something about Jungian psychology. Huh? Do you know the name Carl Jung, a contemporary of Freud's, who took Freud's theories and I would argue, went deeper with them in a spiritual sense? And Jung talks about this matter of a shadow, that we all have a shadow. Does anyone know enough about Jungian psychology to tell us what that would mean? We each have a shadow. Okay, well, I know enough of Jungian psychology to be dangerous. I know a little bit, but... So Jung believed that each of us has a part of ourselves that we disown. Okay, that we, in other words, we don't like it about ourselves. It's our shadow, it's the part of us that is a shadow, namely, we keep it in the shadows, we rarely acknowledge it to ourselves, and we certainly don't bring it out into the light of day to talk to others about it. Okay? But Jung believed that part of our healing as a person, psychologically and spiritually, was the ability to take that shadow out and look at it and own it as part of ourselves, rather than denying it. And of course, with anything that we deny, what happens to it?
It gets stronger.
Yeah, it gets stronger. That's right. We think that by denying it, you know, well, if we just ignore it long enough, it'll go away. Wrong. The more we ignore it and push it into the shadows, the more life that part of us has. Okay? So, Kevin said, is it possible that Jacob was wrestling with his shadow? What would be, now we know Jacob's story here, okay? So how would you describe Jacob's shadow? That part of himself that he might want to disown, not talk about.
The deceitful part?
Yeah, of course. The deceitful part, the trickster part. The egocentric part. I'm going to find a way to get my way, even if it means deceiving, lying, tricking. Okay? He might well want to disown that. So Kevin asks the great question, is it possible that Jacob is wrestling, at least partly, with his shadow here? Bringing it out into the open, wrestling with it, asking God, you know, would you make some sense out of that for me? Can I move beyond that? It's only by acknowledging and wrestling with our shadow that we can move beyond it. I think that's fascinating. It's another way of asking whether Jacob was not, in a sense, his whole life was flashing before him here. And he was trying to make sense of it. God was helping him make sense of it. Yeah.
I think whenever we wrestle with ourselves, that's the shadow is what we're wrestling with.
Okay.
Because the part that we want to keep hidden, and also part of our shadow we're not conscious of. It's very
hard absolutely.
To become conscious of.
Right. Yeah, someone yesterday also mentioned, was Jacob wrestling with his demons? I suppose you could put it that way too, but the only thing though for me is that sometimes demons can be something outside of you, you know, that invade you. A shadow is part of you. You know, I have to own that. That's part of me too, see? And until I own that, I'm not able to deal with it. So that for me is the difference between demons and shadow. There also may be a sense in which Jacob is kind of rehearsing a wrestle with Esau, too. Because we're going to see, Jacob says, I've seen God face to face here. The name of the location, he names the location what?
Denial.
Yeah, which means?
Face of God.
But in chapter 33, the story we're moving on to now, the reconciliation with Esau, there's this great, I think it's one of the best lines in the whole story here.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
You know, this blessing, what do we have anything now in 2006? I mean, all these people are getting blessed. Rebecca's getting blessed. Jacob's getting blessed. Abraham's getting blessed. Everybody's getting blessed. What do we have now?
Okay, hold that for just a second because it's a great question. We'll finish with the face of God part here. After Jacob meets Esau, he says to him, truly to see you is like seeing the face of God. Isn't that beautiful? To see you is like seeing the face of God. So I wonder if that's, you know, not involved here, if Esau is not involved in this wrestling. Well, you know, at any rate, I also wanted to mention, there are a couple of other stories that where there is this, in the Bible, where there's this confusion between, is it a man, is it a human being, or is it God? Remember the story of the three men coming to visit Abraham and Sarah? Who are those men? It's very confusing. It's also very confusing in the text. Are they human? Are they angels? And then at one of the points, it says, and God said, I will surely return in the spring, and you will have a child, Sarah. So the story suggests, again, with a beautiful sort of ambiguity, that one of the three is God, speaking directly to Sarah. So is it God? Is it angel? Is it human being? By the way, who is at the empty tomb on the morning? Who the disciples or the women go to visit the tomb, and who do they find at the empty tomb?
Guards.
Who?
A gardener.
All right, in John's gospel, there's a gardener, someone who's suspected of being a gardener, that turns out to be Jesus himself, okay? That's John's gospel. In Matthew's gospel, we have an angel at the tomb. In Mark's gospel, we have a young man, and in Luke's gospel, we have two men. So we might add, I mean, what's the problem here? They got it confused? You know, is it a man? Is it a young man? Is it an angel? Is it Jesus? I mean, who's there? Well, you know, it could be all of them, in a sense. I think the point here is that, one of the points is that in encountering one another, we are also apt to be encountering God. In striving with ourselves and with one another, there's always that possibility that something holy will happen, that we will also be striving with God. I think a beautiful, beautiful gift of the storyteller to be able to show us that. Yeah.
I've often heard it expressed that the three men that approached has been interpreted as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Okay.
But does the next verse say, my Lord and my God? The following verse after he sees the three men approach him, doesn't it say, my Lord and my God? Addressing the three as one.
We will have to, you'd have to look back at that. It's in Genesis 18. It's a great story. There's clearly that, again, the only thing I recall is that then the Lord said to Sarah, I'll return in the spring. So I don't remember that detail, but that would be apropos of the story. You look back at it in Genesis 18.
I think it's a spiritual beauty of again, the writers of these stories is to let us read these scriptures at different parts of our spiritual development and interpret these in new and exciting and different ways every time you look at them.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, is this speaking to you that, you know, in our wrestling with ourselves, our shadow, with one another, that we, there's a blessing involved, that God is involved in that? I mean, has that been your experience, that in very human struggles, that God, you know, has brought something out of that?
It's really hard work. It's easy to not go there. It's so easy to just go through your day and not wrestle.
Yeah.
But it's very satisfying after you have.
On the other side of the wrestling.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's powerful in that oftentimes we feel God has abandoned us because of our darkness.
Okay. Yeah. But in fact, this suggests just the opposite. Yeah. If you can hang in there, if you can prevail, Jacob, hang in there, there'll be a blessing on the other side. Let's talk about this matter then of blessing. Jacob insists upon taking away a blessing from this wrestling. What does that mean, that he wants a blessing?
That the man won't come after him after they part.
Well, that could be part of it. Uh-huh. I see. So you're suggesting that no harm is meant. He wants an assurance that no harm is meant and he won't be kind of tricked and
right.
Pursued. Later on? Yeah. Okay.
I kind of look at it as coming from his, from their cultural background of the time when this story is, that the blessing meant a heck of a lot, especially to a male, to receive his inheritance.
Okay.
And so Jacob's asking for his inheritance from this being or whatever that he perceives to be God.
Ah. Okay. But it's not a material inheritance.
No, it is not.
In this case, it's a spiritual inheritance.
Spiritual inheritance.
That's a beautiful image, I think.
Yeah,
he's really, I think, asking for some sort of spiritual sense to be made out of what otherwise might seem nonsense. See, we suffer terribly, and we think, gosh, you know, what does this mean? It's just awful. But, and so we want some sort of spiritual sense to be made, some good to come out of what otherwise is a damaging experience. I mean, Jacob leaves with a limp here. He's going to have the rest of his life. And we'll deal with that in just a minute, too.
It's also a sense of reassurance that it's okay to move forward with his plan, Jacob's plan, or whatever, to do what needs to be done, and that God will be with him.
Yeah, sure. That reassurance, presence, you know, that God will be with you.
Courage.
Uh-huh. Good. All of that's involved in a blessing, isn't it?
Perhaps some reassurance that Esau isn't going to destroy him.
Okay.
That's what I was.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday, and we'll get back to that. Why did this wrestling match happen now? Yeah. Rather than some other time, right on the eve of his reunion with Esau.
But she was asking about current day blessings.
Yes.
And I guess I think about one time I was at the Cancer Society, and a lady who had come in to get something, she had breast cancer, and not knowing I was going to set off a whole chain of reactions, I touched her. Mm-hmm. And then she just broke down and cried. So really, I gave her a blessing. Nobody had touched her.
Mm. Yes.
And a lot of times, that's the one thing, if you are on the outside of anything. This time it was just her family because they were afraid of hurting her, you know, so they weren't touching her. Sometimes your blessing
yes.
can be just a touch or yes. a hug. I mean, that's my kind of thinking on today because, you know, we can't go up and say, your life will be wonderful, mm-hmm. you know, but we can touch somebody, whether it's physically or just spiritually or... Thank you, or how are you? Or eyesight. fight with someone who's on the street because they say that people act like they do not exist.
Yes.
So, you know, that could be a blessing.
So the blessing, does it wash away its fear? It wants its fear to go away, and that's what brought on this wrestling.
Well, let us see. We'll see that, I think, in the next story. Let's hold on to that question. Does it seem like Jacob's fear has been lessened or taken away by the blessing? Let's leave that as a question that we'll hope to answer when we get to the next story. It's a good question.
He's himself, too. I mean, I love it that Jacob, so this whole idea of he's wrestling with himself and God, he doesn't completely change who he is, right? I mean, he's been fighting his entire life to do everything he can to retain a blessing. And so, like, I like that he doesn't, I mean, it's still himself. You know, we don't change who we are. We may recognize, okay, this part of me might not be the best, but he is like, I'm still not going to give up this whole lifelong struggle that I've had with it.
Right. And there, that plays into the name change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd think if his name has changed, and again we mentioned this yesterday, that the ongoing story would only talk about him in reference to his new name. But wrong. Both names are used. Jacob and Israel, even after his name has been changed. As if to suggest he still is, in a sense, the same person, but he's not. But both of them are still there. And that's the thing about our shadow, too. You know, when we wrestle with our shadow, bring it out, do we lose our shadow? No, the shadow's still there, but somehow it's less potent. Cara, you want to go?
When I think about the power of blessing for Jacob, I think about what I've learned about Mediterranean cultures, even today, where the evil eye is so important. If you look at someone with an evil eye, and then if you even say words to go with that evil eye, you might as well just, I'm going to get sick and I'll have to be healed. I mean, it's just the evil eye and the power of that is so powerful that you're just convinced that it's going to do something to you physically. And then the blessing is kind of the opposite of that. If someone says a blessing, they're so sure of their words that they're going to come true, and it's words that are going to stay with you forever. And when Jacob leaves home, he's got the evil eye and the evil words of Esau that just follow him, and then he goes through all this bad stuff, and so, well, he's, of course, I'm going to go through bad stuff, I got the evil eye put on me, and so if I were him, I'd be wanting a blessing too. I'd want something to counteract that terrible evil eye that he had from his brother.
Yeah, so there again is the link with the reconciliation with Esau, right? I mean, you're saying the evil eye was really, that's where he left Esau.
Right, yeah.
Now we're on the eve of the reconciliation with Esau, and God gives him a blessing too. So, I mean, I think one of the what's behind your question, or I'm going to hope I'm not putting words in your mouth here, is that maybe you and I could be a bit more intentional about blessing one another. It is so important in this story. I would say that a lot of my ministry as a campus pastor is blessing, involves blessing. Just to reassure young adults who are not sometimes sure about their worth and where they're headed, that you are worth something and where you're headed is going to be good. You know, it may be murky for you right now, but hang in there.
There's a book called The Blessing. I can't remember who the author is, but it starts with this story of Jacob and goes to talking about modern day situations, the way, you know, children need to be blessed. And the way we do that is through our words and through our physical touch, which can either take away from a child or give to the child.
Yeah.
And that was an important book for me. I wish I could remember the author.
Smalley?
Oh, yeah, it is Smalley.
It's called The Blessing?
The Blessing. Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. And the physicality of the blessing.
Right. And
the touch.
You know how the Lutheran Brotherhood has discovered that, you know, the young adults who are, quote, making it in the world, it's one of the biggest features of that is that they had another adult besides their parents that they relate to. I mean, that blessing is a part of that, too, that we have chances to bless children all the time.
another adult or adults other than their parents. Very important. Sunday school teachers, pastors, neighbors, grandparents, surrogate grandparents. All of that is
because that so yeah, that's from Search Institute, and they say that Search Institute says that most children through adolescence never there's not another adult in their life other than an immediate family member who is in contact with them for more than a year period. And now, when there is somebody like that, other than your immediate family, who knows your name and is in contact with you for more than a year, that does wonderful things for your brain development. But most young people don't have that.
Well, we could go a long way with this. I think Kristen and I have been talking in a class the last 2 weeks called Ministry with Millennials here about the fact that there's a common misconception that young adults want to only be by themselves. That's completely wrong. Young adults love intergenerational communities. And this, I think, is a key role of elders, is to be involved in blessing young people. If I've said this before in here, I apologize. I think it was in the other class that in college, one of the things I experienced in my ministry is that the college students have to confront the death of a grandparent. It's often the first death that they've experienced, and that is so powerful. I then realized through the depth of their grief how important the relationship with their grandparents has been. It's totally different than the relationship with their parents. Totally different. There's something more of unconditional blessing with a grandparent. I mean, the parents can't be unconditionally blessing all the time because they're in the daily, you know, mucking of life. But the grandparent can be there to, you know, really bless a child. So you're onto something real significant here. You know, there's also then we'll end with blessing. This book by Matthew Fox called Original Blessing, in which Fox argues, and it's a brilliant point. We all ought to have noticed it though, because that ought to be self-evident to all of us. But Fox noticed it, so we can give him the credit. Matthew Fox argues that it really is inaccurate to talk about original sin. That's really not true. Our original condition as human beings was not sin. Right? I mean, come on. That's chapter 3. Yeah. What about chapters 1 and 2? And God saw all that he had made, and behold, it was very good. In Hebrew, it's a double superlative. It's like excellently excellent. Or superbly superb. You know, it just can't get any. That's our original condition, is blessing. Okay, so can't we try to live out of that? What's this business about original sin? It's really wrong. So this blessing is just really, really huge. And think of that as our vocation as people of God. Be intentionally blessing one another. Also Jacob takes away from this encounter a limp. What do you make of that?
No pain, no gain.
All right. Okay. It's going to be a disability for him, isn't it? The rest of his life.
He's
going to
remember.
Okay. Okay, so it's a reminder. Others are going to say to him, where'd you get that limp? I mean, the last time I saw you, you were walking perfectly fine. What happened to you? And so he's going to have to, every time he either feels the limp or is asked about the limp, all of that, the whole wrestling match with God comes back up. So it's a tangible, physical reminder of God, lest he forget.
And Jacob has a tendency to forget.
Doesn't he?
Easy, yeah.
Now, I mean, you and I don't. So, that's another point. We just got to...
Thank goodness we don't get the limp.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And it must have been a reminder, too, to the whole Jewish community, ultimately, because they didn't eat the muscle.
Correct. So they, so the entire people of God made it into a way that they, too, would be led to remember God, okay, lest we forget. John Sanford, who I've referred to before as having written this great book about the Jacob story and Joseph and Moses, called The Man Who Wrestled with God, and Sanford is a Jungian psychologist and a biblical scholar, says, and I think this is insightful, that this is not a limiting wound, the limp, not a limiting wound, but a wound through which pours the life of God.
Not good.
A wound through which pours the life of God. A guarantee that after such an experience, a person can never again live unaware of spiritual reality. You can't ever be unaware of the spiritual dimension of life because, oh, pain in my head. What was that? Oh, yeah.
How interesting that something so tangible and physical would be what reminds you of the spirit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there again is that inextricable interplay of
incarnation.
Yeah, incarnation, someone said. Our God is always incarnate, never floating up here somewhere. Right there. And so finally, we might, kind of end this way by getting right back in there with that physical reality, the image of a wrestling match. What an image that is for our encounter with God. It's not a polite conversation. It's a wrestling match. And I wanted to read you this poem by Art Waskow. Art Waskow is a Jewish storyteller and poet and biblical scholar. And he wrote a book called God Wrestling, which starts with a chapter on his relationship with his brother. It's kind of a Jacob and Esau story revisited, and here is a poem that he wrote, and I think that it has a lot to tell us about why a wrestling match rather than a polite conversation with God. I wrestled again with my brother last week. First time since I was 12, and Grandma stopped us. She don't even let us fight, we yelled, embracing. But she said talking was nicer. Wrestling feels a lot like making love. Why did Jacob wrestle with God? Why did the others talk? God surely enjoyed that all-night fling with Jacob, told him he'd won, renamed him and us the God Wrestler, even left him a limp to be sure he'd remember it all. But ever since, we've talked. Did something peculiar happen that night? Did somebody say next day we shouldn't wrestle? Who? We should wrestle again with our comrades sometime soon. Wrestling feels a lot like making love.
Wow.
Good. Unless you're willing to risk that physical encounter, that human, deeply human encounter, chances are you haven't experienced the fullness of God. A God who's incarnate always. Or Robert Coles, Robert Coles, a psychologist who's done a lot of work on the faith of children, wrote a whole book about the faith of children, and he interviewed a child once and was talking about heaven and God in heaven, and the kid replied, that doesn't mean much to me. I need a God with skin. I need a God with skin. Well, that's the kind of God that wrestled with Jacob and with us, the God with skin. Thanks be to God. Huh? Okay, so All right, so we've seen, I would argue, some significant spiritual growth in Jacob now. From having left Esau with that evil eye, as Kari said, now to on the eve of his reconciliation. Okay, he knows that he can make his way through struggle and sacrifice and prevail. You've striven with God and humans and have prevailed. He knows that God is a force to be reckoned with always in every part of life. Okay, that limp, that reminder of God. And he's also much more humble, willing to be a servant, willing to serve for 14 years for Rachel, his beloved, and willing now to refer to himself in relationship to Esau as your servant. And we're going to see more of that now. Okay, so if we turn to Genesis 33 now, we want to read Genesis 33, verses 1 through 17. And I need four readers to do that. So you would be willing to read? Okay, if you would read verses 1 through 3. 1 through 3. And then a second reader. Okay, verses 4 through 11. And then reader number 3, let's have Tim do that, 12 through 14. And finally, a final reader who's in good voice here today. There you go, 15 through 17. So we're Genesis 33, 1 through 17.
Jacob looked up, and there was Esau, coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground seven times as he approached his brother.
But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. When Esau looked up and saw the women and children, he said, "Who are these with you?" Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." Then the maids drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And finally Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. Esau said, "What do you mean by all of this company that I met?" Jacob answered, "To find favor with my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Jacob said, "No, please, if I have found favor with you, then accept my presence from my hand. For truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God, since you have received me with such favor. Please accept my gift that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have everything I want." So he urged him, and he took it.
Then Esau said, "Let us journey on our way, and I will go alongside you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail, and that the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are overdriven for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant, and I will lead on slowly, according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir."
"Let me leave some of my men with you," Esau said. "Why do that?" he asked. "I only want my Lord to be kind to me." That day Esau left to go back to Seir. Jacob moved to Succoth, where he built a home for himself and shelters for his stock. This is why the place is called Succoth.
What strikes you about this story?
He saw the face of God in his brother.
Okay. Why?
Because he wrestled.
He's a changed man.
Okay. Okay. Jacob is a changed man. What evidence do we see of that?
He's been very humble in his approach to his brother.
Wow. It's almost more than, it's exaggerated humility. Jacob continues to call Esau my lord, or another very accurate translation would be my master. My lord, my master, and refers to himself as your servant repeatedly. Esau has to kind of stop all that by saying in verse 9, I have enough, my brother. I have enough, my brother. So Esau doesn't want any part of that lord and master and servant thing. But Jacob has been changed. And he's been so changed that, remember the blessing, or the birthright, I would say, that Jacob had opportunistically traded his brother for a bowl of oatmeal or whatever. The birthright conveyed that Jacob, and not Esau, would be the head of the family. Okay? And Isaac, in commenting upon that, says to Jacob, you're always going to be the Lord. You know, and to Esau, you know, he's always going to be your Lord or master. It's almost as if here Jacob is now at the point where he is ready to give back to Esau what he had taken from him earlier. See, I'm going to call you master and Lord. You know, I've worked through all that, and I want you to have that. I want you to have that. What was rightfully yours, I want you to have that back. Yes?
What I noticed, though, when he was ready to take to bring his family to his brother, he started with those who were the least connected with him. First it was his maidservants and their children.
Yeah.
And then it was Leah and his, those children. And last, it was Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wait a minute, you know, he's still holding back something there. He's not going to risk his most beloved first.
Right. Okay, but there's also a very, very important note about that. Remember in the beginning of chapter 32, after the messengers say that Esau's coming to meet you, and by the way, he has 400 men. Jacob is rightly scared, and he does the same sort of ordering of his company, okay, just in case Esau should gain on them and come upon him. Except where exactly is Jacob himself? Well, wait a minute, though. In chapter 32... where exactly is Jacob in this company? This is in verses 6 through 8. We do not know. We do not find out. It is unclear where Jacob himself is in the company. However, now after the wrestling match, it's quite clear where Jacob is.
He's in the front.
He's in the front. In the most dangerous position of all. So if there's going to be loss of life, if there's going to be danger, Jacob is ready to put himself right in the front of it. That, I would argue, is a change. Jacob has lost his fear, or at least most of it, before his encounter with his brother.
But that playing favorites continues to haunt him in his later life.
Well, it does, and hopefully we'll have a little time to look at that. Yes, that's exactly right, it does. And there again, you know, the fact that we never totally lose our shadow. You know, it's always there. Another thing I think is striking is that Jacob is quite clear that everything he has been the gift of God. Isn't anything he has done?
He's finally discovered God language.
He has. Yeah, and now it flows from him, you know, almost second nature.
Who are these with you, Esau says, the children whom God has graciously given your servant, Jacob replies. Please accept my gift that is brought to you, Jacob says, because God has dealt graciously with me. Now, I want to give you some of that. So Jacob is now fully aware of God's intervention in his life and able to speak of it. Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I just wonder if part of seeing the face of God is the mercy that he is granted by Esau.
Yes. He says that, doesn't he? This is in verse 10. For truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Why? Since you have received me with such favor. The same way that God received him and gave him a blessing after the wrestling match. All right? Even though God could have pronounced a terrible judgment upon Jacob's life, but he didn't. The same with Esau. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It seems like there's still a bit of deception or something with this brother, that he doesn't really trust him all the way.
Where do you see that?
At the end, when Esau tells him that he'll leave some men with him.
Yeah.
And Jacob says, oh, you know, I'm going to travel way too slow, and I don't really need your man, and I'll meet you in this place. My question was, did he ever get to that place?
No, he did not.
Yeah. So he had other motives. He didn't want the soldiers with him.
Mm-hmm. There was a reconciliation here, but it didn't lead to Esau and Jacob living together. They never... Esau says, well, let's travel together. You know, let's go together. Well... Yeah, that's right. Isn't that that's right?
I think the most important verse of this section is verse 4, where Esau leaves in the reconciliation by embracing Jacob.
Okay.
And that's your poem you read. This is the love part of the wrestling. God, Jacob wrestled with God, and then Esau, he embraces it. It's more touching. It's love.
Yeah. Isn't that stunning? Esau has long ago forgiven Jacob. Remind you of any other stories you've ever heard? The prodigal son.
Yeah.
Right. And in fact, some of the language is absolutely identical. He ran out to meet him and embraced him. You know, even before the son got there, the father was out to embrace. Even before Jacob got here, you know, Esau's there embracing. There's a beautiful, beautiful story.
And Joseph with his brothers.
Joseph with his brothers. Exactly right. Exactly right. Yes. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. Why expect estrangement? I think the story is telling us. Expect forgiveness. I mean, we might as easily expect forgiveness as estrangement. It's a beautiful, beautiful note of forgiveness. Let's see, anything else here about this story that is striking to you?
I'll have to go with that expect forgiveness, because proof that it didn't always, it's not going to happen tomorrow, or maybe in a year, but it can take a while for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Boy, it sure can.
And forgiveness doesn't always mean you're going to be best friends or you're going to have a lot of affection for another person.
Doesn't it? That's exactly right. Okay, I want to return to a point I made yesterday, which I think is important, that the wrestling is not the end of the story, Jacob's story. So, you know, we might linger on the wrestling and say, wow, what a blessing. I mean, Jacob wrestled with himself and the shadow and God and got this insight and blessing out of it. Let's all go home. Okay? But that's not the end of the story. The end of the story is reconciliation with Esau, his brother. And Joan Chittister, do you know that name, Joan Chittister, a Roman Catholic sister, wonderful commentator on the spiritual life, has written an entire book on
on her own life, and that all is around the Jacob story. It's all around this, the wrestling match with God. It's called Scarred by Struggle, Transformed by Hope. Scarred by Struggle, Transformed by Hope. It's in the Holden bookstore here. It's really a fine, very human book. And she makes this point about the end of the story being reconciliation. This is just two sentences. Let me read these two sentences to you. This is about the God wrestling story. In the end, the story implies the spiritual life is not simply a matter of doing good works or practicing the social virtues or earning a good reputation or living a life of religious regularity. What is needed is reconciliation with the world around us. What is needed is reconciliation with the world around us. Okay? So whatever Jacob gained from the wrestling match was not to be looked at as kind of a private possession or an insight, and whoa, now I'm right with God, you know, and I can go home and feel good about myself. Uh-uh. That was all a blessing that was to lead to reconciliation with his brother. So if God has given us any blessings, and I know that we're all aware of that, that all that blessing is to be used to bless others and to reconcile with one another. Also remember that this is a story about nations here, huh? I mean, Jacob represents the lineage of the people of God called Israel, and Esau represents the people of the East, the nation of Edom. So in this interpersonal reconciliation, there's also an impetus toward national reconciliation, too. So, okay, we have about 8 minutes. Oh, we can do some good things in 8 minutes. Because actually, the story of Jacob's not over with yet. The story goes on. God tells Jacob to settle in Bethel, where he has had the powerful dream before. On the way there, Benjamin is born, the last of his sons, and in childbirth, Rachel, his beloved wife, dies. There is a second reunion of Jacob with his brother Esau and with his father, Isaac. And at that reunion, Isaac dies. This is in chapter 35, and the two sons, Esau and Jacob, together bury their father at the end of chapter 35. And then at the beginning of chapter 37, we have the beginning of the story of Jacob's sons, which is really going to be mainly a story about Joseph. And as Kari suggested earlier, Jacob, for all the spiritual maturity that he has gained, seems to not be able to overcome that family trait of favoritism, of one child over another. And it gets Jacob into big, big trouble again. We don't have time to read this whole story at the beginning of Joseph's story here in chapter 37. Suffice it to say that Joseph is a very special child, right? And he knows it. He's special to his father. This creates resentment among the sons. But I wanted to show you especially verse 11 here and see if this reminds you of anyone else in the family that we've read about. Joseph has these dreams, and they're rather audacious dreams about how the family kind of revolves around him. And a good question about this is, does Joseph tell these dreams arrogantly, or does he tell them matter-of-factly? It's just some, I mean, he could have kept them to himself after all, but anyway, he tells them. And what does Jacob make of these dreams? It says in verse 11 of Genesis 37, "So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind." His father kept the matter in mind.
I think he's had experience with dreams, and so
has
maybe
it.
The brothers, he understands that this could be pretty significant from the standpoint of his own.
Bingo. Bingo. He's also lived his childhood with a mother who had a good habit of keeping things in mind, spiritually. So that's a interesting note to the story. Of course, Joseph is then sold into slavery by his brothers. He's given up for dead by his father. Incredible grief here at the end of chapter 37. But then, you know, the way this story progresses, there's an eventual reunion of the brothers with Jacob and with Joseph. And I want to look at that very briefly here. This is in chapter 45. Let us look at chapter 45. Joseph reveals himself to his brothers. They cannot believe that it's him. They were dismayed, as you might guess that they were. They thought he would be dead. So how does Joseph then speak to his brothers? This is stunning, I think. Could someone read, please, Genesis 45, verses 4? Well, let's read verses 4 through 9. Someone please launch in. Genesis 45, 4 through 9.
Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. He said, "I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay.'"
Okay, and so they do. They all do come down and live with Joseph until the famine is over. But wow, is this amazing? "Do not be distressed or angry with yourselves, because God had a hand." God really meant all of this for good. Wow. That's incredible spiritual maturity to say that. And Joseph repeats that again at the very end of the book of Genesis in chapter 50. Jacob finally dies, and the brothers, no matter what experience, this is kind of like what happened to Jacob, you know, even though he's seen the face of God in Esau, he doesn't really want to live with them. Even though Joseph has, you know, done everything for his brothers in Egypt, when Jacob dies, the brothers are fearful. Now that Dad's out of the way, they're going to get back at me. But Genesis 50, verse 19, Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today." Isn't that stunning? And you intended harm to me. Let's be honest about that. It was real harm you intended. But God intended it for good. Okay, God is going to bring something out of the messiness. This is a messy, messy story. A story that we've been reading all week, but God has been active in all of it in order to bring good out of it. So, you know, as we go from this place back home, whenever that's going to be for all of us, I hope that you will go back home with Rebecca and Jacob walking right alongside with you, this courageous, spiritually aware woman, Rebecca, and this guy Jacob, who has learned a lot through his wrestling with God. Then finally, you know, the one who's always beside of us, just like he was on the vision that Jacob has, is God. Remember that? God was right beside him. So, you know, hopefully we can take that back with us where we're going. And be ones who are always aware to be blessing others. So thanks for this week. It's been very rich for me.